Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Awakening Together gathering. It's really, really wonderful to see everyone here. I'm scanning the board right now, looking at your names. I love that I know most of you. I can't say that I know all of you, but I do know for sure that I know most of you, and maybe, who knows, maybe I know more of you than I think, because every now and then, you know, your pal talk nickname is not like your name, and when I find out who's behind the pal talk nickname, I go, oh yeah, I know you. And my mind is not super good at remembering pal talk nicknames if they're not like the name. That's just the way it is. But anyway, it's really good to see all of you all here this morning. It's a beautiful morning, is it not? I mean, just a gorgeous, gorgeous morning. We are going to start by greeting one another. And of course, I'm going to play the song that I always play when we greet one another. It seems like a wonderful theme song for us. It's called We Are Awakening by Deva, Pramal, and Mitten. So please, everyone, enjoy saying hi.
We are awakening to the call of the mystic awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Because I think of Tom Conway a lot during this part of the gathering. Tom Conway used to be one of our trustees. He isn't anymore, but he used to be one of our trustees. And he designed a lot of our initial policies and procedures, including the one about the order of service that we have for the weekly gathering. And I remember Tom saying that the greeting part should last, you know, somewhere between, I think he said, I don't remember, it was either 1 to 2 minutes or 2 to 4 minutes or something like that. But I always have that the two minute marker is in my head. And so whenever I play this song, I always play it to a little over 2 minutes, even though it's a 7 minute song, because I remember that the greeting portion has to be around 2 minutes. So I always think of Tom, and I always follow those instructions. And now, in our order of service, It is time for our statement of purpose. Awakening Together, as you all know, is an assembly of equals. And we are joined in common purpose. And that is awakening to our one true self. That's why we're here. One thing that makes Awakening Together different than maybe some other churches is that we allow each one to follow their inner path, which means that we may be within an appearance of many faiths, an appearance of many cultures, an appearance of many symbols, but we're not disjointed. We are joined because together we seek to discern one truth, and to rest in its embrace. So we're a little different than some churches in that some churches do not have the many faiths, many cultures, many symbols. They're joined in their faith, in their culture, and in their symbols. There are, of course, churches like Unitarian Universalist that definitely allow many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. But the interesting thing is, if you look carefully at them, they are not joined in purpose. And yet we're joined in purpose. So what makes us maybe a little bit unique is that we both allow people to follow their own inner guidance, to follow whatever path they feel called to follow, and we are joined in one purpose. We are all here to discern the one truth and to rest in its embrace. Kathy asks, how is the church status coming? I think you know that in August we were asked to respond to a question that the IRS had because they were doubting our church status and they wanted us to provide more information. We provided a lot of information and they are required to read every single document that we submit. So it will probably be a bit of time before we hear back because we gave them a lot to read and then we will find out. So we are still being checked out. Yeah. Also, I want to focus today on we have five core values that we're also joined on, but I want to focus on just one of those core values today. And the core value that I want to focus on is core value number 4. This is that value. We affirm one true self as the only truth. And isn't that interesting? We affirm one true self as the only truth, which means really nothing else is true. And that leads on to how we live this value. We live this value by embracing what is helpful on the path of awakening without idolizing any spiritual doctrine as truth. And of course, if the one true self is the only truth, then no spiritual doctrine, which will definitely vary in some way from another spiritual doctrine, they can't be truth. They're pointers towards truth, right? But what I want to focus on today, what I want to focus our attention on today as we go into the reading today and as we go into the teaching today is this part of core value number 4. We live this value by embracing what is helpful. And if you were to have a question in your mind today that will help you hear, you know, Jesus used to always say, for those who have ears to hear, if you would like to focus on an inquiry that will help you tune in to today's teaching and today's reading and really hear what's being said, I think a good inquiry would be, what does it mean to embrace what is helpful? In fact, I'll type that in the room. What does it mean to embrace what is helpful? I think that's what we're going to be looking at today. When do we know if we're really embracing what is helpful? Before we get into that part of our gathering today, we do have some announcements. The first announcement is that registration for the Jan Fraser and the Regina Don Akers retreat has closed. That closed last Wednesday. The Regina Don Akers retreat actually doubled what was anticipated for registration, but the retreat center was kind enough to give us additional rooms and they moved us to a bigger conference room. So that's still going to work. So I'm looking forward to seeing all of you all at that retreat as well as the Jan Fraser retreat. Also, rooms are sold out for for the Bentinho retreat. However, you can still register for the Bentinho retreat as a commuter until this Wednesday, October 21. This Wednesday is when that registration will close. And there are some hotels just down the road for all price ranges. And those hotels, well, at least three of those hotels, you know, one kind of low, middle, and high, are listed on our website. So if you're feeling called to attend this retreat, please register right away. Again, registration will close on Wednesday. And after that, you will not be able to register for the retreat. Also, if you are going to any of the retreats, Jan Fraser, Regina Don Akers, or Bentinho, and you are staying at the retreat center, there is shuttle transportation available. It will help you both from the Denver airport and from the Colorado Springs airport. If you're flying into Colorado Springs, you can take the shuttle all the way from the airport to the retreat center. If you're flying into Denver, we will give you a link so that you can register for public shuttle transportation from the Denver airport to a particular Colorado Springs hotel where we then pick you up and bring you to the retreat center. There is a small fee for this additional transportation because, of course, we had to rent the vehicle. Oh, Barb is asking, how many are going to Jan's portion of the retreat? Depending on the day, it's 31 or 32 people. We have one more person on Sunday than the rest of the weekend. So 31 or 32 people are going to Jan's portion. Yeah. Also, Jan is coming in late on Thursday night, and she will be staying at my house on Thursday night. She's never been to Colorado before. So I've told her I'll take her to Garden of the Gods so she can get a little taste of Colorado before the retreat begins. So that will be nice. All right, so again, register for Bentinho by Wednesday, October 21, if you feel called to come to that. Register for the shuttle by Wednesday, October 21, if you feel called to have a ride from the airport. Right now that we have a lot more people who have registered for the retreats than registered for the shuttle, and maybe some of those people are driving up. I can look at some of those names and say, oh, that one's probably driving up. But I think a lot of you are going to want rides. So please go register for the shuttle. Kathy's saying, what is the name of the shuttle? In this moment, as I sit here, I can't give you that information. However, while I'm playing the opening song, I can run over to the website, get the links, and bring it back for you, Kathy. Where are you flying into, Denver or Colorado Springs? Because the information varies depending on where you're flying into. And I'll provide information for both. I'll put them in the room during our song. Oh, Colorado Springs? You'll just use the Awakening Together shuttle, which will be driven by Ken Gibson. That's a vehicle we rented. So I'll go get those links for how to register and bring them back to the room during our opening song. Before I do that, there's a couple more announcements I want to make. One is that we do have a new class starting in November. That class is Introduction to Sufi Thought. And I don't know what you all know about Sufism, but Sufism is highly, highly, highly devotional. It's really quite beautiful. It's about loving God, loving truth, and even loving emptiness so much that the ego self just disappears in that love. It's really quite beautiful. And we have a class. It's not an intellectual class. I don't know if you've ever taken our classes. If you haven't, then you might not be aware that they're not intellectual classes. You don't show up for the class and someone teaches you. What really happens is you are given, we call it homework, but it's really spiritual practice is what it is. You're given homework prior to the class, and you spend a week doing the homework, and then everyone comes to class and discusses their experience with the homework, their own clarity, their own insights, and then the facilitator sometimes adds something to that. But it's really about you going within with your inner self. And when you take the Sufi class, you go within in a very devotional way. Some people, when they first, in the first week or so, because it's different than what they're used to, they say they feel a little awkward. But I say, just keep it up. Keep practicing the Sufi way and see what happens. It's amazing how some people transform. It's amazing how some people transform in that class. I remember one guy said, I've never resisted anything so much in my life. And by the end of that class, oh my God, he was so into devotion, so into the love of God, getting so much clarity, writing his own poetry. Just a beautiful, beautiful thing. So, so if you are interested in taking this Sufi class, there are two classes to choose from. One is a Tuesday night class from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Jay McCormick will be the facilitator. The class begins on November 17th, but the homework will begin a week earlier on November 11th. There's also a Wednesday morning class. That's the one you'll be in, Peggy. The Wednesday morning class is 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. I am the facilitator of that class. That class will begin on November 18th. The homework begins a week earlier. Since it's a morning class, I recommend starting the homework on November 11th. The registration for both of these classes closes on November 10th. It's a 5-week class, and the cost is $100. The cost of our classes is always $20 per class week. So a 5-week class is $100. And if you're interested in this class, then please be sure to go to our website underneath the classes link and register before November 10. Also, the last announcement that I want to make tonight, we do have a satsang here in the room with Suzanne Marie. Suzanne Marie was recommended to me by one of our members for a satsang. She has been interviewed by Rick Archer on Buddha at the Gas Pump or batgap.com. Her website, if you want to go check her out today, her website is transformationthroughpresence.org. transformationthroughpresence.org. But you can just come here tonight to get to know her. She'll be here from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It'll be right after the Seven Steps teaching. So please come here tonight to get to know and hear the wisdom of Suzanne Marie. And her name might be pronounced Susanna, even though it's spelled Suzanne. So we'll get clear on that tonight. So what I'm going to do now is play our opening song. And as I promised during the opening song, I will get the links that are needed to register for the shuttle. The song that I'm playing is Thy Word by Amy Grant. Please enjoy.
Is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Hey, Thy Word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. When I feel afraid and think I've lost my way, still, you're there right beside me. And nothing will I fear, oh, as long as you are near. Please be near me to the end. Oh, yeah. Oh, that is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Hey, Thy Word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And I will not forget your love for me, and yet my heart forever is wandering. So Jesus, be my guide, hold me to your side, and I will love you to the end. Oh yeah. Oh, Thy Word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Hey, Thy Word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Whatever this is.
And then it stops there. So it's almost like they almost started another song and then they stopped this track. By the way, I want to say something else, not necessarily about the Sufi class, but I was watching, you know, Peggy say, when does this homework start and all of that. So I had mentioned that there was a man who took the Sufi class before that in the beginning said he'd never felt so much resistance to anything before. He really just didn't like it at all. But he stayed with it. And I said that by the end of the 5 weeks, he was just transformed. He was so deep into devotion and just writing incredible poetry from devotion, you know, which he'd never done before. It was just amazing to watch. One thing I'd like to point out is that often what we feel great resistance to is exactly the direction we need to walk in. The resistance is attempting to keep us from going where we need to go in order to awaken or transform, or however you word that. If we always listen to our resistance, we're going to keep ourselves in this little bitty box of not expanding, of not changing, of not awakening. So just because you feel resistance to something does not mean you should not go there. In fact, if you've ever read the teachings of Inner Ramana, you know that I felt great, great, great resistance when I was the scribe of that book. And in fact, we hear stories about people who threw the course across the room because, of course, they had great resistance to the course. I never had that kind of resistance to A Course in Miracles. But when I was writing the teachings of Inner Ramana, I had so much resistance. I thought I would crawl right out of my skin. I mean, I just can't. It was like having fingernails on a chalkboard, you know, just incredible resistance. And one day while writing the teachings of Inner Ramana, I threw my notebook across the room, got up and walked away. But the teachings of Inner Ramana was a wonderful, wonderful thing for me. So just because there's resistance does not mean you should not walk that way. In fact, great resistance might mean that's exactly the direction that's most helpful to go in. With that said, what I want to do is introduce you to our reader and our reading. Now, I know I'm going to mispronounce your last name, Sandy, because I've heard you say it a couple times, and I know that I say it differently. So please, when you take the mic, feel free to give us the correct pronunciation of your name. Sandy lives right here in Pueblo. I call her Sandy Ruiz. She's very cute. But one of the things about Sandy that I deeply admire is her sincerity on this path. It is obvious. She's actually a fairly new student, you could say, to this path, but very deeply sincere and really using her entire life for practice. So she will be reading today a little piece that I have titled Untitled True Story About M. the Seeker and his experience of listening to talks by Jiddu Krishnamurti. Again, it's an untitled true story about M. the Seeker and his experience of listening to talks by Jiddu Krishnamurti. And I'm sure you all remember the rest of the story. I will tell you the rest of the story later today as I'm speaking. I'll tell you who M. the Seeker is. But first, I'd like you to just listen to what Sandy reads. And also remember our question, what does it mean to embrace that which is truly helpful? Keep that question in mind as you listen to Sandy reading. Sandy, the mic is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me? Okay, great. And Regina, yes, the way you said my last name was perfect. Some say it Ruiz. I say it Ruiz. Some say Reese. But anyway, it's great. And I am happy to be here. And this is a great story. I'm happy to read. And as you said earlier, it is an untitled true story about M, which is the initial M, the seeker, and his experience of listening to talks by Jiddu Krishnamurti. So M, the seeker, attended J. Krishnamurti's series of talks and questions and answers sessions in Ojai, California in 2 different years. Each series of talks lasted 2 weeks. Talks were on weekends and questions and answer sessions were on the weekdays. More than 1,000 people would attend each talk. People arrived early to get a good seat. M arrived earlier to be the first or second in line and always sat front row center. M was very quiet. However, the crowd would be chattering away the whole time from when they arrived until Krishnamurti arrived. 1,000 people chattering away is very loud. When people saw Krishnamurti's Mercedes arrive, the word spread quickly that he had arrived and the crowd stopped chattering. From the great thunder of more than 1,000 people chattering to everyone being quiet. When Krishnamurti's talk had ended, Krishnamurti would ask everyone to get up, and everyone except for one person in the crowd would get up and leave. The crowd would chatter again as they were leaving. The one person who did not get up and leave was M, the seeker. M, the seeker, stayed with his eyes shut for the purpose of reflecting on what Krishnamurti had just said. When M, the seeker, was attending the talk without having brought anyone with him, he would always stay there for a very long time after the crowd had left, sometimes for more than 1 hour. Years earlier, M had listened to a recording of Krishnamurti saying to a crowd, "Have you listened? No, you have not listened, because if you had listened, you would have left here with ecstatic mind." M remembered that and took that to heart and put that into practice by often staying for a long time after Krishnamurti's talk had ended to reflect on what Krishnamurti had just said. What does reflecting mean? The first point to be understood is during and after the talk, do not go on to some other thinking, some other subject. Don't get lost in something else. That means to stay with what Krishnamurti had just talked about. So, after the talk is over, keep asking yourself, what did Kay just say? From the second the talk is over, continue keeping your mind on what the talk Kay just gave. The mind may wander onto something else for a few seconds, and if it does, that's okay. Just bring it back to the question, what did Kay just say in the talk he just gave? Every time the mind wanders for a few seconds onto something else, bring it back to the question, what did Kay just say in his talk? That is the first point and the primary point. Even if you don't reflect, keep bringing the mind back to the same question, what did Kay just say in his talk? Bring what he just said back to mind. That means you are keeping your mind on it and not letting it go elsewhere. So for maybe 30 minutes or 1 hour after the talk has ended, you are still keeping your mind on the question, what did Kay just say in his talk? Be very careful about what thought does at that point, because thought may invent an interpretation of what Kay said that is not what Kay just said. The crowd follows certain patterns. In the case of JK's talks, they used every second before Kay showed up to chatter, and as soon as Kay was finished talking, they immediately began to chatter. If you think they were chattering about what Kay just said, then you don't know much about humans. They were chattering about nonsense. What are we going to have for lunch? Kay has just given an invitation to leave with ecstatic mind, and the humans are thinking and chattering about, what are we going to have for lunch? They all got up and left. Instead of staying and reflecting upon what Kay had said, Thoughts, beliefs, concepts, opinions are also like a crowd that follows patterns. The fact that someone did not go onto other thoughts and thus get lost in other thoughts and subjects like that entire crowd did is a great first step. Just being willing to give up an extra 30 or 60 minutes for the purpose of staying focused on what was just said is the first step. If thought tries to add some interpretation, ask yourself, was this really what Kay just said in his talk, or is this some interpretation of what Kay just said? There may be hundreds of different thoughts that the crowd went on to next. But all those different thoughts on different subjects had in common is that they had nothing to do with what Kay said. One of the keys to the lessons of Krishnamurti's story was that Krishnamurti once said to a crowd, again, have you really listened? No, you have not listened. Because if you had really listened, you would have left here with ecstatic mind. Whatever the various reasons people choose not to stay and reflect on what Kay said immediately after the talk had ended, while the talk was still fresh in memory, they were missing an opportunity to leave with ecstatic mind. Whatever thoughts people went on to immediately after the talk had ended, none of those thoughts were more important than leaving with ecstatic mind. If you ever have an opportunity to leave with ecstatic mind, forget about what are we going to have for lunch or any other of the 100 thoughts that will leave you unchanged. Instead, after a sage has finished speaking, ask yourself, what did the sage just say? Thank you, everyone. Have a great morning.
Thank you very much, Sandy. So, again, the question that I suggested that we reflect on today is, what does it mean to embrace what is helpful? What does it mean to embrace what is helpful? And it's really interesting, the story that this particular spiritual teacher shared, who right now is being called M. the Seeker. M. the Seeker is how he refers to himself or his body, he would say, how he refers to that body prior to his awakening. So when he talks about the stories of the awakening path that was experienced, he says that M. the Seeker, M. the Seeker. So what he's talking about is things that he observed and how M. the Seeker may have been different in his embracing of the teaching than maybe thousands of others who most probably have not at this point yet gone on to awakening. And some people might feel that M. the Seeker is being judgmental against others. Let me just share what another teacher says, just so you'll know this isn't an individual point of view. Another teacher posted this in Facebook last December, and it jumped out at me then, and in fact has been contemplated by me since December, because I thought it was such a powerful quote. And this morning I scrolled back to December in Facebook wondering if I would be able to find it. And sure enough, there it was. You know, thank goodness for Facebook. So I was able to bring the quote back. This is the quote. By the way, this is Bentinho Massaro. Look around you and marvel at how much importance people give to insignificant things and how rarely they consider the truly significant things. Chit-chat. Chit-chat. Distraction here. Distraction there. Marvel at it. Giggle, rudely or compassionately, either way. And resolve to never drown in the human condition to that degree yourself. Then love yourself and them as a perfect expression of the One, Bentinho Massara. And again, if you listen to Bentinho's words, you know, I'll say with the wrong mind. If you listen to Bentinho's words with the wrong mind, you may think that he is judging. But he is not judging. He's pointing out the same thing that M. the Seeker is pointing out. That if we allow our minds to so quickly leave a spiritual teaching that we have just been with and go to chit-chat, 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 we are allowing ourselves to go into distraction. We are missing an opportunity. And as I mentioned, this quote by Bentinho Massaro jumped out at me last December and has been with me ever since, although word for word I had to go look for it this morning. But the main point has never left me. And I think that's an example of embracing the teaching. If Bentinho Massaro types something in Facebook in December of 2014, and if in October of 2015, Regina is still contemplating that short quote, she's embracing that teaching. She's looking at herself. She's asking, am I moving into the chit-chat, chit-chat, chit-chat? Or am I staying with the teaching? Am I taking the advice that, you know, I can't say that when the Bentinho quote jumped out at me, it jumped out at me because of my great respect for Bentinho. And that doesn't mean I don't have great respect for Bentinho. I do. You know, I love him. But that's not why the quote was important to me. The quote was important to me because I recognized the truth in it. It could have been said by anyone. These words could have been said by anyone. And my heart would have said, listen. This is important. This is, as M. the Seeker said, this is a key point. This is not a minor point. This is a key point. What does that mean when something is a key point? That means if we don't listen, we are missing a magnificent opportunity. Yeah, pay attention. Pay attention, as Kathy is saying. And that's what my heart said when I saw this Bentinho quote. Pay attention. It opens doors, Paul says. Absolutely. If you listen to this, it opens doors. So let me just read again what Bentinho said. And someone has asked me if I would post it again in Facebook. I will. I will go post it in three places today. I will go post it on the Awakening Together Facebook page. I will post it on the Open Minds Facebook group, and I will post it on the Awakening Together Sanctuary Facebook group. So you'll have three different places where you can find it. All right, here's the Bentinho Massaro quote. And you know what? I'll put it in the posting, by the way, with the recording too, because people who listen to the recording a week from now or 2 weeks from now, but then it will be too late for them to go to Facebook and get it. I mean, so I'll just put it in the posting, so it'll be right there for them. So here's the Bentinho Massaro quote. Look around you and marvel. I love this word, by the way. Marvel. Marvel at how much importance people give to insignificant things and how rarely they consider the truly significant things. Now, when I see that word marvel, I don't know what that means to you. Marvel at how much importance people give to insignificant things. But that tells me be amazed. Not be judgmental of. Be amazed. And if I am amazed, non-judgmentally amazed, at how much people are giving attention to insignificant things and how rarely they consider the truly significant, the impact they may have on me is that I will make a different choice. That I will choose to spend my time contemplating the truly significant things, right? So through the process of marveling at just how common giving importance to the insignificant is may have the effect on me of the reverse, right? Look around you and marvel at how much importance people give to insignificant things and how rarely they consider the truly significant things. Chit-chat. Chit-chat. Distraction here. Distraction there. Marvel at it. Giggle rudely or compassionately, either way, and resolve to never drown in the human condition to that degree yourself. So the first reaction might be judgmental. He says, if you giggle rudely at it, oh well, right? But then resolve. That's the important part. Let go of that judgment, let go of that thought of others, and resolve to never drown in the human condition to that degree yourself. Then love yourself and them. So see, if there was at first a judgmental response, you're now dropping that judgmental response completely. You're loving yourself and them, right, as a perfect expression of the one. In fact, what you might say is, thank you for that teaching. Thank you for, you know, if you see a bunch of people chit-chat, 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 and something in you recognizes, ah, there's something off here, right? That might be the feeling, there's something off here. And then you resolve not to do that yourself. You can then say to the ones who were chit-chatting within your mind, thank you for the lesson. They were your teachers, right? They were the Christ for you, helping you to see the path you needed to walk of embracing the teaching. Now, Lynn has written in the room, I do not see how I can non-judgmentally see differences between you and me. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting comment only because of our daily quote today. So let me go to the Awakening Together daily quote and let me read that to you because I think it's going to fit right in with this. The Awakening Together daily quote today. The ability to perceive differences and to discern one thing from another is one of the most valuable tools you can have. It is one of the most valuable tools you have, both for your spiritual progress and for how to live in the worldly life. And that is Michael Langford. The ability to perceive differences and to discern one thing from another is one of the most valuable tools you can have. Why? Why is it valuable to perceive differences? Well, like contrast, discern illusion from truth. Yeah, absolutely. Discern what is helpful from what is not helpful. Discern ego from Holy Spirit, right? If we cannot discern the differences, then we don't know what route. We don't know the best route. It can be a tool, and the tool is the best route. So there is a way to non-judgmentally perceive differences. The question is, what do you do with that perception? You know, if you use that perception to continually judge others, to continually, in some way, say you are better than or different than, right? Well, then it's not helpful. But if you perceive a difference, and you see it as a lesson. It speaks to you. You know, the Holy Spirit, using the language of A Course in Miracles, speaks to you through everything. Through everything. It's always there with the right interpretation of every situation. So if you should happen to be, you know, in a crowd of people, you listen to this profound talk that just blows your mind away, and you stand up and your mind is spinning with the wisdom that you hear, and you turn and your friends immediately start chatting at you about other stuff, and something in you feels off. This is off. You know, there's something not right here. It would be the feeling. This is off. That off feeling is teaching you. That off feeling is saying, do not go so quickly off into distraction. Stay with this profoundness. Go walk off by yourself. You know, either stay here like M. the Seeker did, or walk off by yourself and stay with this teaching. Do not go with the crowd. You guys remember what Jesus talked about in the Bible, right? The wide road to destruction and the narrow road to salvation. You see, the wide road to destruction is going with the crowd. Let's listen again to one thing that first I'll go back to Bentinho real quick and then I'll go back to M the Seeker. Bentinho said, resolve to never drown in the human condition to that degree yourself. Do you hear? That's the crowd. He's calling it the human condition, the wide road to destruction. Resolve to never. I mean, this is great, great advice coming from someone who has gone very deeply. Resolve to never drown in the human condition to that degree yourself, right? Now let's listen to what some of the things M. the Seeker said. He says that the one person who did not get up and leave was M. the Seeker. M. the Seeker stayed with his eyes shut for the purpose of reflecting on what Krishnamurti had just said. He would stay there for a very long time after the crowd had left, sometimes for more than an hour. He says that earlier he had heard Krishnamurti say in a recording, have you listened? No, you have not listened, because if you had, you would have left here with ecstatic mind. You know what this reminds me of? When he heard that quote from Krishnamurti, he says he took that to heart and put it into practice. That quote by Krishnamurti, have you listened, stood out to him and spoke to him and taught him in the same way this post from Bentinho Massaro spoke to me. You see? I said this post from December has stayed with me all of these months. This quote from Krishnamurti stayed with him for, I believe, years, until he had the opportunity to actually go to a Krishnamurti talk, and of course he put it into practice, right? He says the first point to be understood is during and after the talk. The first point to be understood is during and after the talk. Do not go on to some other thinking, some other subject. Do not get lost in something else. Now, we have a unique opportunity to embrace this. Our unique opportunity is that we are an online assembly, which means that when someone is here in the room speaking, maybe sharing something very profound, really worth listening to, maybe we are deeply listening. Maybe. Jamie, do you want to go for a walk? She's snoring, Ron. You have to come down and get her. Sorry about that, guys. Maybe while someone is talking, sharing something very profound, we are half listening, half on Facebook, or half reading email, or half doing something else. Are we listening during the talk is the first question. When we come into the sanctuary, are we giving our full attention to what is being said here? I will tell you that I have resolved to do so. I have resolved that when I come into the sanctuary, and I'm not here a lot. I mean, I'm sure some of you have noticed that. I come here for the weekly gathering. Of course, I'm here when I'm teaching the seven steps. I'm here when I am leading the satsang of the month, you know, interviewing someone. I now come in for contemplation three nights a week. And I'm going to attempt to stay, you know, depending on what's happening in my life, I'm going to attempt to stay more often after my seven steps teaching for whatever is on from 8 to 9 in the sanctuary. These are commitments that I really feel in my heart that I can make to being in the sanctuary. And when I am in the sanctuary, my commitment is to give my full attention to what is here. When I'm in the sanctuary, my commitment is to give my full attention to what is here. I will not be in the sanctuary and on Facebook. In the sanctuary and doing work. If it's worth it for me to give my time to be here, then it's worth it for me to listen. And if I need to be someplace else, then my attention needs to be with that someplace else. Right? If I need to be working, then I need to be working. I'm not going to be here. No divided attention or divided purpose, right? So the first thing that in the Seeker talked about was the first point to be understood is during During. So the first question is, during the talk, are we there? Are we giving our full attention? And he goes on, the first point to be understood is during and after the talk. What about after the talk? Another unique situation that we have here in the sanctuary is, you know, every week during our weekly gathering, we have a reading, followed by a teaching based on that reading, followed by a contemplation time. And by the way, remember I told you all that Tom Conway wrote our policy about, you know, the order of service we would have for the weekly gathering? And I told you that he said about 2 minutes. I can't remember the exact numbers, but I remember 2 minutes was in there for the greeting. He said 5 to 7 minutes for the contemplation after the talk. 5 to 7 minutes. So when I select the song that I play after the teaching, when I'm the minister, I always make sure that song is at least 5 minutes long. And what are we to be doing during that 5 minutes? Running off and going to the bathroom real quick? Getting another cup of coffee real quick? Going to Facebook? Checking email? No, I think Kathy has the correct answer. Contemplating. This is an opportunity built into our weekly gathering for us to do what both Bentinho Massaro and M. the Seeker are recommending, set back and reflect on what we have just heard. Reflect. And then what we have built in after that is the opportunity for you all to share what has come to you during that period of reflection. And what's wonderful about that is that means we are not moving on to chit-chat, chit-chat. Our focus remains with the talk, with the reading, with the reflection. And as we each share, that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Because as Kathy shares what came to her, and as Nancy shares what came to her, and as Barb shares what came to her, and et cetera, et cetera, we're getting to hear more and more and more depth. And we can contemplate not only the reading, not only the teaching, but also what each person shared after their period of contemplation. Then we have even more fodder for our own reflecting. The first point to be understood is during and after the talk, do not go on to some other thinking, some other subject. Do not go on to some other thinking, some other subject. Do not get lost in something else. Or as Bentinho Massaro says, resolve to never drown in the human condition to that degree yourself. Now, M. the Seeker says your mind may wander onto something else for a few seconds. And I love how non-judgmental he is. He says this may happen. You know, you are sitting there with the intention of contemplating the reading and the talk, and your mind goes off to something else. He says if it does, that is okay. Just bring it back, right? If it does, that is okay. Just bring it back. Keep asking, what was just said in this talk? Or what did I hear in this reading, right? He says, the fact that we do not go on to other thoughts and get lost in other thoughts and subjects is a great first step. First step towards awakening. A first step towards truth realization. This is what he means. By the way, M. the Seeker, for those of you who haven't already figured it out, is Michael Langford himself. The one who, now the reason I say himself is because our daily quote, by coincidence, is also Michael Langford. Again, the daily quote today was, the ability to perceive differences and to discern one thing from another is one of the most valuable tools you can have. It is one of the most valuable tools you can have, both for your spiritual progress and for how to live in the worldly life. And by the way, Michael Langford would kind of joke, but with seriousness say, it's important to know the difference between a bowl of cereal and a bowl of sand. Or I think he says a bowl of cornflakes and a bowl of sand. If you think it's not important to know the difference between a bowl of cornflakes and a bowl of sand, try eating a bowl of sand. You know, so even in the daily life, we need to be able to perceive differences, right? But also perceiving differences is very, very helpful spiritually because, as you guys have so wisely pointed out, it lets us know the route. It lets us know the path. As Jesus would say, it helps us to find that narrow path that leads to salvation. So, you see if there's anything else from M. the Seeker. Well, M. the Seeker says, let me read these two paragraphs again. This will be our closing. He says, whatever the various different reasons people chose not to stay and reflect on what Kay had said immediately after the talk had ended, while the talk was still fresh in memory, that's actually a good point in itself, to contemplate while it's still fresh in memory, right? They were missing an opportunity to leave with ecstatic mind. Whatever thoughts people went on to immediately after the talk had ended, none of those thoughts were more important than leaving with ecstatic mind. None of those thoughts were more important than leaving with ecstatic mind. None of those thoughts, none of those thoughts were more important than leaving with ecstatic mind. And if we really contemplate wisdom when we hear it, we will have ecstatic mind. So with that said, it is time for us to go into our own contemplation time. And today I am going to play a song for us. Let's see, the name of the song is, I have that written down somewhere. Of course, you know it's at least 5 minutes long. The name of the song is I Hear Your Call by Kathy Robel. And of course, there will also be a link in the room if anyone chooses to donate. But let's focus on the contemplation, shall we? So, I Hear Your Call by Kathy Robel. 5 minutes. one of the things that came to me during my contemplation just now was that when Tom Conway wrote the policy about our weekly gatherings and what we would do here together, he gave 2 minutes, 2 minutes for greeting one another. Because, of course, he knew that our joining is very, very important. But he gave 5 to 7 minutes for our contemplation. Because he knew that was the real purpose for our joining. Right? So we aren't joined together in a common purpose for socializing. We're joined together to support each other in the common purpose of awakening to truth. And this is emphasized even in the way that Tom assigned the times when he designed our order of service. It tells me that Tom was very focused on purpose, very clear on why we are together. So, Tom, thank you. So my question is, what came to you as you contemplated today? Who would like to share? All right, dances, the mic is yours.
Good morning, and thank you, everyone, Regina, everyone. One of the things during the whole thing, and even with the contemplation, is I kept getting, my brain kept going to this thing, okay, don't do that, don't do that. You know, just be very vigilant, don't do that. And something that came to me was, and that's not even, you know, really how it was worded, it was just how my brain picked up on it, and my mind picked up on it, so I was like, there's a place in the Course, I don't know where it is, where there's an example of, rather than don't do this, think on this. So it's replacing one thought with another. And that took me to, like, as an example, don't think about a pink elephant. That immediately conjures up the thing that I'm not supposed to do. And I use that as an example because it's so simple. It's like I don't have to analyze blah, 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 you know, the concept or whatever. You know, if I use some philosophical term or whatever. Instead, it would be, think about a pink elephant. Okay. I don't have the resistance to not do something like, I think I said that backwards. I don't have the resistance to do something as I would if I'm told, don't do this, or if I tell myself, don't do that. And that took me to the, in child psychology, there was an example like with children. And I use this on when I train dogs, too. It's the same thing. If a child picks up something that they shouldn't have and they put it in their mouth or whatever, it's just, you know, say they grab a knife that fell to the floor or something. If we take the knife from them, they're probably going to cry or they'll be upset. That often happens with, you know, small children, babies. So when taking the object away from them, replace it with something else. It's the same thing with thoughts. What do I want to think about? Not thinking about something is very challenging. That stupid pink elephant is still in my head. But if I say, yeah, what's wrong with thinking about the pink elephant? Then, you know, they don't have the resistance, so I just replace it with a zebra or whatever, you know, that I need to be thinking about. Like, you mentioned on Facebook of cruelty or disaster. Replace that image with the world that I do want to see. Oh, sorry. I think I'm done. I'm sorry that the volume was so low. I wasn't speaking directly into the mic. But I'm done now, and I I'm sure you've heard what was needed to be heard. Thank you. I'm dropping the mic.
Yeah, thank you, Dances. And I have the ability to turn up and down my speakers, so I was able to turn that up and capture it on the recording just fine. And now I'll turn it back down in case Kathy's louder. We don't want her booming into the recording. Kathy, the mic is yours. And Kathy, just to let you know, you do not have the mic at all. Do you want to try again? All right, Kathy, it looks like this might be one of those times when that mic is not working for you, but if you would type in the room, we would love to hear what you were going to say. Dances, one of the things that was coming up for me when you were speaking is I think this is why Michael Langford gave us the question, you know, to ask during the contemplation afterwards, you know, basically, which is, you know, what did Kay just say? You know, another way to ask that question, what was just heard? What was just said, maybe? What was just said? What was in this for me? You know, what do I need to hear? And that way, it gives the mind a positive question, right? Yes, to ask, to keep us on reflection. Lynn, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. Thank you, everyone. I was thinking about the story that Sandy read about M the Seeker. And as I was listening to the story, of course, of course came to my mind, you know, how much of the time that M the Seeker was sitting there thinking about what Krishnamurti said, how much of the time was spent thinking about the people that got up and left, how much of the time was spent speculating on what they were thinking, how much of the time was spent speculating on where they were going, how they were not paying attention, how they were not contemplating, you know, patting himself on the back for being the good good contemplator that, you know, at least stayed there to think, at least didn't get up and go speaking, at least didn't get up and go to the movie. And you know, this probably sounds pretty harsh, and yet I would wonder that whenever I'm doing that kind of thinking, I'm seeing myself as being something different than the people that I'm judging for doing what they're doing, and seeing myself as being better than those people in some way. And that is just me, and I'm not saying that he was the same way. I'm just saying that if that were me doing that, I can see how my ego is very involved in proving itself to be the better student, proving itself to be the holier person, proving itself to be the one who can sit and contemplate. And, you know, perhaps, you know, I find myself doing this on many occasions. So comparing myself to these other people, and also thinking that if I were a person who had reached enlightenment, then I would see very clearly that that's not really a very good story to tell people, because what it does is encourage people into more judgment and more looking at other people's behavior and thinking that a good contemplator, and that's a judgment right there, would not have even noticed what other people had done or didn't do, and would not have even cared what other people had done or didn't do. And so I'm thinking that maybe another judgment, a better story, would have been, how did I see these things happening, and how did I confront my own thinking about them, and how did I see that my own thinking was flawed in believing that somehow I was better than them as a contemplator, as a listener, as a spiritual person, because my behavior was different than what theirs was. And, you know, that probably doesn't sound very nice. Doesn't sound very nice to me. I would not like to hear that being said about, you know, someone I respected. However, I can't not ask the question. So that's my thoughts. And, you know, I'd like to know at least what's the difference between discernment and judgment. So I'm letting go of the mic.
Yeah, and Peggy, I'll turn the mic over to you for just a second. All I can answer on that, Lynn, is what this does for me. When I read Bentinho Massaro's quote last December, I did not spend time from last December until now looking at other people and thinking, oh, look how they're not doing it. I spent time from last December to now asking myself, how can I deepen my listening? How can I deepen my contemplation? How can I deepen making sure my time is not divided? And then when this Michael Langford story was shared with me recently, it just led me to start looking at that again, because maybe, you know, it had faded a little bit since the Bentinho quote, and so it brought it back just as it was beginning to fade. And that's why I said that what I have resolved to do is when I'm in Pow Talk to give 100% of my attention. I did not say what I've resolved to do is why I am in Pow Talk. Notice how many other people I think are giving their attention. That would be a distraction. And in fact, I think that would be going on to other thoughts. You know, Michael Langford said that the question that we are to ask ourselves is, you know, what did the sage or the speaker just say? And if our mind starts to wander off to other things, like are other people paying attention, that's okay, he says, but just bring it back. Just bring it back to what did the speaker just say. And I think if we really practice that, there's a deepening that happens. There's a deepening that happens. That's my experience. And, of course, one reason I'm sharing this is because I want to deepen my own resolve in that practice. As you know, we always teach what we want to deepen within ourselves. And so when I'm in the evening contemplation, for example, and other people are sharing, I want to be with eyes closed. I want to be really listening. And then even after I turn off the contemplation at the end of the night, when I leave the room at 10:30 Eastern time, I want to go ahead and sit for at least another 15 minutes. Contemplating afterwards, focusing afterwards, what was just said. I want to allow the deepening. So this is the way it has spoken to me. It has nothing to do with judgment of others. It has everything to do with making the right-minded choice within myself. Peggy, the mic is yours.
I will speak as just a newbie with my experience with the sanctuary. Very grateful for the experience of this gathering with like minds. I will say that I have observed myself, and when I can just listen to the teacher, I absorb. When I get caught up in the posted comments, which sometimes get down to chit-chat, that I am so distracted that my ego comes up and I will want to even type in something that I think is helping the speaker or helping others understand, when actually the greatest help I could give anyone would be to deeply listen, absorb, and accept atonement for myself.
Yeah, thank you, Peggy. And actually, you're pointing me back to, in my mind, you're pointing me back to our sanctuary etiquette. You know, when that etiquette was first created, of course, there were some people that had resistance to it. But of course, remember I mentioned that just because there's resistance doesn't mean you shouldn't go there. But our etiquette was designed so that people can come into the sanctuary and be focused on purpose. Again, that's why we're here. We are an assembly of peers, right? And we do love one another, and we want to be joined. But our purpose is awakening, and the sanctuary is here for a purpose. So a part of our etiquette has always been that there shouldn't be this chit-chat. There shouldn't be this talking that isn't on topic. That any typing in the room should be about the deepening of what the speaker is saying. That is the purpose for being able to type on the board. I was recently in the room when some chatting started to happen in another direction. In fact, someone even asked me a question, and I just chose not to respond. I thought, oops, this is going off in the wrong way. I didn't feel like typing in, you know, anything. I wasn't the administrator at the time. I didn't feel like typing in, you know, oh, you know, we shouldn't be doing this. It just didn't feel right. It felt right for me just to stop. You know, once I saw that the chatting was going off in a way that had nothing to do with what the speaker was saying, I just stopped. And I just closed my eyes and began to listen. And if we all did that, you know, we don't have to correct others, but if we all just didn't participate in off-purpose chatting in the room, off-purpose chatting will just die out. So again, you know, we don't need to judge others. We don't need to correct others. We only need to watch ourselves. But there is a purpose for this room. There really is. And if we can stay on purpose, it benefits us. Let's see, God is glorious, I don't know who, your name, but has written, what does it mean to embrace what is truly helpful is what stayed in my mind as I was thinking on the latter part of the sentence, what is truly helpful. And what came up for me is having an attitude that this moment, no matter what it is truly helpful, came up. Yeah, so giving our full attention to this moment. In fact, a part of the story, I didn't share everything that Michael Langford shared because the story was very long. But another thing he shared that also stayed with me as another key important point was he would listen to the Krishnamurti talk. He would stay and reflect on the Krishnamurti talk. And then he said usually when he left, I guess there was a horse nearby, he would go and he would pet the horse. And he said when he was petting the horse, he was not reflecting on the Krishnamurti talk. He was giving his attention to the horse. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, God is glorious, that this moment, what's in this moment is very, very important. Notice there wasn't divided attention, even when petting the horse. Catherine is God's name. Thank you. He wasn't petting the horse in a distracted way and still thinking about Krishnamurti. He was now giving all of his attention to the horse, right? So we mentioned before something about divided attention. We know divided attention is not helpful. So that was another key important point to me is be with wherever you are, whatever is here. Yeah, be with the horse now. And that's why when I come into the room, I don't come into the room when I'm working. There'd be divided attention, part attention on the room, part attention on the working. It doesn't feel right for me. So when I am working, my attention is on my work. I am not in the room. When I am with my family, my attention is on my family. I am not in the room. When I am in the sanctuary, my attention is on the sanctuary. And this is what feels very, very right for me. You know, just being with whatever is right here. All right, so we have run over a little bit, but I appreciate everyone's sharings very much. And what I'm going to do, let's see, Jacqueline has written, in embracing what is truly helpful is what distinguishes discernment from judgment. Yeah, and somebody else made a comment earlier. Someone was talking, so I didn't comment on it. But something about discernment is when we take the lesson for ourselves. Judgment is when we stay focused on the others, right? So we may see something being played out with others, but then we turn around and we take that as a lesson for ourselves. We don't stay focused on the others, right? And I think that within ourselves, I think that anyone who really wants the answers to these questions already knows the answers to these questions. It's a matter of just turning toward the heart. So what I'm going to do now is just play a song. It's kind of a fun, kind of a light song, but it just gives us one more brief time to contemplate what was said before we end our gathering. This song is Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's by Israel Kamakawiwa Ole. And I may have mispronounced that like I mispronounced Ruiz.
we abide, and the dreams that you dream of once in the love abide.
For being with me today, and I'll see you this evening. Remember, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time is the Seven Steps to Awakening, and then 8 p.m. Eastern Time is the Satsang with Suzanne Marie, and then, of course, 10 p.m. Eastern Time is Contemplation. So I hope to be with you all in one or all three time periods. Bye.